Welcome to Mental Illness Life. I am Brooke. You guys, I'm so excited. I got a new microphone. I got the Blue Snowball. You know, this whole thing, starting a podcast and doing a podcast, does not take that much money. It really doesn't. I have my laptop, my trusty laptop. I do have the Adobe suite of products, but you really can use anything. You can use the free version of Audacity. That's what I used until I was able to get this Adobe, but I also use that for my web business. But this microphone's so cool. It's just like this round, it looks like a snowball, except for it's black, and it's just really cool, and I can't wait to hear the sound quality out of it. And to be honest, it's probably not, you know, that much different, but it's still cool. I love it. So I need to recap, because I think a lot of you are listening from the most recent back, and that's fine. If you do want to start from the beginning, that kind of sets things up for the next one and so on and so forth. I don't necessarily talk about totally separate things. I do in a sense that each episode, you know, really looks at one part of my mental illness and one part of what I can share with you. But it doesn't really give you the background. So I am 43. I just turned 43 yesterday. Happy birthday to me. And I have been living with mental illness my entire adult life. I have PTSD, bipolar disorder, anxiety disorder, and adjustment disorder. And I've gone through numerous therapies. I'm on a pharmaceutical plethora, a cornucopia, if you will, of medications. And all of these things have been managed and repurposed and retrained. And, you know, we've looked at all of these things and reevaluated, and we've come up with, you know, numerous different paths to my successful living with mental illness. You guys, you can't cure mental illness. It's not curable. And I've made this joke a few times lately, like, you cannot yoga your way out of mental illness. You cannot exercise your way out of a panic attack. If you do try to do that, you're going to make your heart race even faster. So take my advice. Understand where I'm coming from, that I do all of those things. I meditate in my own way. I do all of these non-medical psychopharmacology options, but those are just add-ons, okay? You cannot at all rely on those things solely. So what I talk about is my experience. I know the last episode was me interviewing my son, Broden. You got to listen to that if you haven't. It's amazing. And if only for the laughs and the gravity blankets and Baymaxes. See, now you want to go listen to it, don't you? So if you haven't heard it, it's awesome. I'm going to do more of those. I have literally people lined up, kids, high school kids. Well, there's two. They're not lined up. Okay. I'm lying. That are willing to, and their parents are willing to let them talk to me about their mental illness and their diagnoses as high school students. And again, this awareness is really trying to reach every person, every age, everything. So here's the deal. I'm a little fired up because I've been working on this other episode, this other topic that I'm so incredibly passionate about. And I had to step back a little bit from it. What I want to talk about are words, okay? All the words in our language that offend people, that piss people off, the swearing, okay? So I've had all these conversations all coming in my head. I know you guys can't see me. I need to like video these because I use my hands kind of all around my head. Sometimes that's just how certain of these illnesses manifest themselves, is like, you know, sort of surrounding my head. And then also with the transcranial magnetic stimulation that I'm doing lately, it's literally a helmet on my head. So it kind of pertains to all of it. So all of these things, and I'm so passionate about the fact that I don't give a fuck if you say crazy or insane or anything. It's like the most used word in the English language. And I want to talk about the swearing and like the things that have come to me by my conservative friends and a couple of clients of mine that, you know, have a certain viewpoint on the swearing. So I had to put that on the back burner, but I thought it segued perfectly into anxiety because it's been giving me anxiety. Okay. Like big anxiety, especially because of certain, you know, clients. And then like what my son said in the last episode about how I say, oh my God, that's giving me anxiety. And it's kind of like this, my go-to. But I will say this, when I say that to somebody, like, or just in general, like, oh my God, this is giving me anxiety, it's almost a comfort to me. And so if somebody, you know, says that, or, you know, you think that there's some sort of appropriating, you know, anxiety that they don't really have into some comment, like, just don't. It's a sense of comfort. It's, for me personally, being logic and a computer programmer, it makes me feel like I can put a name on it. I can go, oh God, what is this feeling right now? You know what? It's giving me anxiety. And then I step away and, like, you know, kind of deal with it then. So just don't get so caught up in the fact that somebody's using something to describe how they feel, because that's a really good thing to be self-aware enough to know what you're feeling. Okay. If it's a word that's going to make you feel better, then fucking say the word. Okay, so I'm going to start actually with this recording that I just heard this morning in therapy. My therapist played it for me and it like blew my mind. No pun intended, but it blew my mind. Chills. She had tears in her eyes and she's heard it like 100 times. This recording is a slam poetry by Jane Nichelle. And she is a slam poetry artist from Atlanta, best known for this short poem about anxiety entitled Friends with Benefits. And I wanted you to tell me if at times you've ever felt like this, and I guarantee you that you have, so don't even try to lie. And there's more of us than not that feel this type of anxiety. So give this a listen. It's going to give you chills.
My anxiety and I have what some people might call a friends with benefits relationship. We have no love for each other, but she still just like fucks with me sometimes, you know? We moved in together some years ago. We have inside jokes. Like when I say, I'm gonna go talk to that person over there, my anxiety looks at me and is like, bitch, please. My anxiety is the reason I didn't talk to you. She's possessive. She doesn't like me talking to other people. She's irrational. Because of her, I'll take the long way to my building to avoid someone I already passed by twice because I don't know if it's acceptable to say hey a third time. Because of her. I don't correct people at restaurants who get my order wrong. I just eat it. Because, you know, maybe sweet potato fries are what I wanted, but the broccoli you gave me is what I needed. Thank you. Because of her. I take the long way to my building to avoid someone who kind of looked like my ex-boyfriend. Because whenever I hand her the aux cord, she makes sure to play back all the times he told me no one else would ever want me. Because of her, I still think no one else will ever want me. I constantly wonder what happens to a black girl who is too anxious to ever feel like magic. Can she still fly? Can she still be fly with wings that tremble? Can she forget the lifestyle of an ant, that feeling that no matter what she does, she is in danger of being crushed? And my anxiety doesn't like to be made into metaphors, but what I'm trying to say is she is constantly reminding me of how easy I am to crush. As I speak, I am pushing against her weight on my shoulders, and that is why I shake sometimes. I have to fight to stand up straight, stop rocking. She and I picked out this outfit together. Something that dries fast. If I am sweating, it is because doing this poem feels like fighting a boxing match that you can't even see, and I am determined to knock her out. I have been fighting her for control of our house for years, fighting not to crack, stop rocking, don't shake, breathe. I think the reason my relationships don't work out is because no one knows they're signing up for a threesome. I understand. I know how hard it is to live with both of us when we don't like feeling out of control, when we don't handle conflict well, when we don't handle being yelled at well, when everything you say to us will be repeated and deconstructed and analyzed in our head a million times after, and if I am silent for a while, it is because I have to fight with her before I can fight with you. I've tried to cut her off before. I cannot. We do not handle separation well because of our parents, our friends breathe. So I guess my anxiety and I have just learned to live together. She's the longest relationship I have ever had, and as everyone leaves, she is the only relationship that I can count on.
Okay, amazing, right? This is how I feel so many times, like in a situation where I'm thinking one thing and I feel calm and collected, and then all of a sudden, my anxiety comes out of nowhere. Well, I guess it's she's always with me, right? But anxiety, Brooke, comes out of nowhere and just kind of like barges in. And again, I'm using my hands, like barging into a door, like, here I am, bitch, and I'm taking care of shit now. And that's just how it works, right? It's just how it works. I'll tell you some examples. So I had this situation where I was doing some work for a company, and through them had a client. I don't know if that makes sense. They were the middleman, okay? And so I had doubly the amount of clients to serve, all right? And it kind of made me nervous at the beginning. So I want to like really point on that your intuition is everything. Male, female, I don't care. Children, your intuition is everything. And what you need to do is really, really listen to that. Because, you know, anxiety in itself is a normal and healthy emotion. It's there to help us understand a situation, to read a room, those feelings of anxiety on a date or when you're, you know, in a group of people where you're like, I need to get the fuck out of here for my own safety. Anxiety, that's what it's for. It's not, you know, it hasn't manifested in the world because of, you know, problems and mistakes we've made. It's in our body for a reason. So today, I got an email from this person saying, you know, I just don't know if this is, I had done like 15, 16 hours worth of work and, you know, was kind of just feeling a weird vibe with one of the other people and, you know, just didn't know if it was because of my work or what. And I deal with this all the time, like feeling inadequate, obviously from my trauma as a child, but you know, it's like that feeling of inadequacy is part of anxiety, Brooke, the one that just kind of barges in. And she certainly showed up in this situation where I got this email from this person and they said, you know, I just don't think it's really working. I need to take the weekend to like, you know, think about it and kind of get back to you. My immediate response, or let's just say anxiety, Brooke's immediate response was, oh my God, I did something wrong and they don't like my work. And they, you know, they don't want me to do any more work for them. And I mean, just on and on in my head. And it was like a vicious, vicious cycle, which happens all the time. And I got my phone out while I'm reading the email. And I wrote back immediately that, oh my God, you know, does this mean that you want me off the project? And are you even going to pay me? And are you, you know, upset with my work? And I wish that I even said, I wish you had given me more content. So you get the idea that like if I'm building someone a website, I need them to give me content, like their images, their writings, that kind of stuff. Like a lot of web people do that for their clients, but I do things a little differently. Anyway, I actually said to him, you know, I really needed more content, and then hit send. Didn't even think about it because then it took me 4 hours to like come down from this, that like it really wasn't that big of a deal. It was just business. And my therapist and I talked about it, and she started laughing. And I said, you're not supposed to laugh at me, but this is kind of our relationship, right? And she's like, I could see this. I know you so well that I could see in my mind what was happening, like what you were doing, and that this, you know, that this, that anxiety Brooke kind of shows up and is like, you know, and so I'm putting my hand out like, no, I got this, bitch. Like, I got this. Let me write this email. Okay. I got it. Calm the fuck down. I totally have this for you. And then, you know, regular me sort of sits back like, okay. And, you know, anxiety Brooke is writing the email, hit send. And then I come to and go, oh shit. And of course this person writes back saying, whoa, you know, I just needed to like take the weekend. And, you know, it ended up being okay. But the point of this is that, you know, we've got this separate entity that just seems to just show up and take over. And it's our job as someone living with mental illness, it's our job to overcome that and take the bigger step, be the bigger person, you know, like shove that. I can only describe this as like my huge hand, like shoving this girl's face down. And I was in the car at the time. So I'm thinking to myself, shoving her down into like the passenger seat, like, you know, that's what should have happened. Instead, I was like, okay, you do it. And, you know, before I could think, you know, she hit send. So that kind of just goes to show that what I've been saying to you is that, you know, there's no cure to mental illness. There's no cure to anxiety. If you're dealing with it, you are either managing it, you know, you're taking medication, you are going to therapy, you're doing yoga, you're managing it, right? But that doesn't mean it doesn't flare up. You cannot murder anxiety, Brooke. It's not possible. It just isn't. And anyone that says that it is possible is lying to themselves and you. Okay. The fact that the majority of us have some sort of anxiety in the first place, because like I said, it's intuition. It's those, you know, fight or flight moments where you need to get the fuck out of there. That's part of our makeup. That's part of our physiology. There's just some of us where it's not firing quite correctly and it makes things heightened. It makes things worse. So I want to give you some definitions. You know me, I like to like define things. So it's not just me spouting off what I think. And again, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a doctor. I am not going to answer your questions about your issues, okay? I am here to help you help yourself, okay? So when I talk to you about, you know, mental illness awareness and you being aware of me being someone with mental illness, having anxiety, and like what to do about that, I'm really not. I'm mostly talking about you. I want you to become so self-aware that you take the time to go do something about it. You don't just push it down. And honestly, pushing anxiety down is one of the worst things you can do. It will literally eat you alive. Remember that, you know, mind-body connection, whatever you want to call it. You are what you feel, just like you are what you eat. All of that stuff combined, your adrenaline, you know, all those chemicals, the medication you take, all of it, the endorphins that could, you know, that raise when you do yoga and exercise, all of that combined is what's happening in your body. And if you push down depression, you push down anxiety and you say like, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, you're going to break. I guarantee you, that's all there is to it. So my point is, I'm talking to you about mental illness awareness for yourself and for the people around you. Okay. To be honest with it, not just to tell you about my situation and what I do, but to help you understand that to help yourself, you've got to be aware first. Okay, so definitions. This is from Webster's. Okay, it's a noun. Anxiety is a noun. A feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease, typically about an imminent event or something with an uncertain outcome, meaning like he felt a surge of anxiety. So again, you can use the word anxiety for normal situations. It's not just to talk about somebody with mental illness having, anxiety disorder. It's just an English word. Also, a desire to do something typically accompanied by unease. So, for example, the housekeeper's eager anxiety to please. Again, just a word. So, as you can tell, I'm very passionate about this. Like, it's just a word. Let's not lose focus of the real issue here. But in psychiatry, which, listen to this and tell me if you don't think this is sort of the same as the regular noun. A nervous disorder characterized by a state of excessive uneasiness and apprehension, typically with compulsive behavior or panic attacks. And that's pretty generalized, right? When I talk about my diagnoses, they all sort of meld together, right? The trauma triggers, set off an anxiety attack. My relationship with money causes crippling panic attacks. My bipolar depression causes anxiety because I get into this vicious cycle of up and down. And when I get completely down into that deep depressive episode, I then panic because I know I'm not going to get anything done and I don't like being depressed. So I get more depressed and then more anxious, and it just keeps going and going around in circles. And again, I am medicated. I have gone through therapy. I know what it is like to be curled up on the floor, unable to move. So when I realized that taking medication, going through therapy and exercise and all of these things are what's going to manage it, and never am I so delusional to think that it's cured, that when it does happen, like earlier today or that situation with that email, I can recognize it and I see it for what it is. That's where I want people to be able to get to, right? Is the self-awareness that comes with understanding who you are and what you need to live and be successful. So, okay, I gotta give you another example, right? It's all coming down to self-awareness. And I realize these things over and over that show up, that maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, really any time in my life before 10 years ago, I'm so crippled with guilt that I would not be able to do these things. So I had a situation recently where I was asked if I needed a ride up to this weekend ladies retreat getaway. Most of these women who I don't know, and I had to say to a few of them, actually, no, thank you. I like to drive myself. It's like 2.5 hours away, something like that. Having my car there is a source of comfort to me. Not having to drive others and be responsible for like their stuff and their safety and getting them back and having to wait for them and riding for 2 hours with idle chit chat when I really just like to listen to my loud music and meditate. I meditate when the music is the loudest, and goddamn, that Bose sound system in my Pathfinder is so killer that those 2.5 hours, I'm like looking forward to being by myself. I know some of you are the same way. My friend, though, kept mentioning, you'll have so much fun, though, you won't want to leave, as if my anxiety explanation had somehow made it seem like I will want to make a run for it. But if I thought that were the case, I wouldn't have agreed to go in the first place, okay? This, my friends, is what self-awareness is. Knowing yourself and knowing your illness and rising above it and being clear on what you need, what you want, what you're not going to, you know, accept, what you're not going to put up with, all those things. That's self-awareness. Being the better person, being the one in your relationship with your anxiety who takes the reins whenever he or she can, and saying fuck you to her. Okay. My anxiety level and my guilt level almost said, on like the third time, oh, well, maybe they need me to drive somebody. Oh, well, maybe we need to carpool for the environment. Oh, well, maybe. Nope. I am driving myself by myself with all the stuff that I need in my car. I don't like other, you know, unless it's my son or like one other person. That's why I drive a big SUV, because it's not super closed in and it's quiet. And I can drive quietly and there's no one calling me, because I could just say I'm on the road, right? There's another situation that somebody asked me about. Like, so a friend of mine who actually I just know on Facebook, what a wild situation Facebook is. My birthday yesterday, I'm not kidding you, there was like 150 people leaving messages on my Facebook page about my birthday that I hardly even knew a lot of these people. It was kind of lovely, to be honest. And I've met people through, you know, different other groups and that kind of stuff. And so my friend, and if she's listening, I really love her. I'm a total fangirl of her. She's a stand-up comedian. She's written a book. Like, I'm just such a huge girl fan. Fangirl? Girl fan? Whatever. I'm old. And she knows who she is. Like, I'm just so glad that we're friends now. I'm going to take her improv class in June. So excited. If you guys, and it's totally out of my comfort zone. As much as you think that I'm an extrovert and like am comfortable, I am comfortable talking in here and I'm comfortable talking to a group of people, but that's been honed over time, you know, and, taking these other classes and doing these things for yourself, it's really just, you know, an advancement in who you are as a person. So I'm not sure if that even made sense, but I'm leaving it in. So this friend of mine had this little like evening get together at this cute restaurant downtown Boise. And I didn't know anybody going, not anyone. And when I got to the parking garage, instinctively, I had to sit for a good 15 minutes and breathe. And sometimes I talk to myself and sometimes I like take my phone out and just kind of like scroll through pictures. I don't even know. It's like whatever I can do just to sit. And again, being in my car, it's this source of comfort for me and kind of closed in. And I don't know what it is about that car. I love it so much. And it's gotten me so far, if you will. So I don't know. Anytime you think about your car, just think about that, how far that car has taken you, and just have a grateful appreciation for it. And so I finally got out of the car. My heart's racing. My adrenaline is high. Again, I quit drinking. So I think before I probably would have like had a drink at home or even I'll say it in the car. And it's part of the reason I don't drink anymore. It's just a lot of bad decisions were made. So this whole social anxiety thing, I figured it out. I got up. I went into the restaurant. I sat down next to this girl who's now become a good friend of mine, of course, and then was surrounded by many, many people. And then, of course, being introduced like, this is the girl with the podcast. And, oh, you've got to know her. And, oh, this is the girl. And, oh, you might need to talk to her about, you know, entrepreneurship and web development. And it just comes all at me all at once. And I just decided I'm just going to tell people, look, you're going to have to tell me your name again because my social anxiety just kicked in like through the roof. So sorry, but that's how it is. And I felt good about it. So I guess my point is too, with all of these different stories, is to tell you being authentic and being true to yourself and self-aware, it's the only way to get through these things. There's no amount of like breathing or, I mean, of course, breathe, right? But there's no amount of like coping mechanisms that are going to really take away those feelings of social anxiety. There's just not. You kind of have to push through and be authentic. Just say how you're feeling. People will understand. They will respect you more. I think more people wanted to talk to me after I started being my, you know, my really true self, which, you know, for a long time, I can honestly say for many, many years, I have truly, honestly been my real self in situations. And I'm proud of that fact. And it really boils down to reaching out, you know, breaking down your own stigma to get help, to go to therapy, to get medication, to try all of these things, right? To like me, like quit drinking or, you know, whatever. But it all has to be one big combined process and not one thing or the other. And none of it is magic. None of it. So I want to talk about my anxiety around money, okay? This one's going to probably take a while, or it won't take long at all because it's so simple. But I technically make a lot of money. I have a computer science degree. I did quite well after college. I even had a few bartending jobs in Chicago that, you know, I made a ton of money. And you know, right now, I've been self-employed since 2010, and I had a computer business that was successful. I was given a very large amount of money as an investment to that company. I was given a very large amount of money last year for an early inheritance. I charge quite a bit of money for my web development services and consulting business. I do sort of technology consulting as well. And each of these scenarios, I have had crippling anxiety, thoughts of I'm not worth it. I'm going to fuck it up. I'm going to waste it. I'm going to end up like my dad. Oh, there's a story I haven't told you about yet. Note to self, talk to them about my father's terrible decisions that I feel like I'm repeating by way of genetic inevitability. yeah, I will tell you that. So all of this like surrounding money is, and I'm sure because of that situation with my dad, it makes me feel inadequate, unable to accept the money. Once it comes in, it goes straight back out, whether it is to pay bills or, you know, just like take care of other people or you know, put back into the business, which is good. Okay. None of those things are not bad, paying bills and putting money back into the business, but saving, you know, for some reason, like holding on to money causes me anxiety. Isn't that backwards? It seems so backwards to me. So, and I, of course, I see all these. Remember when I told you about like cute cat videos and you know, inspirational internet memes and how, you know, everyone needs mental health, but not everyone has or needs to be treated for mental illness. Remember those two differences? So with all of these like coaching programs and all of this shit you see on Facebook, like, you know, just leave it all behind. Start fresh. You know, come on. You can start new. Come on. That's way easier said than done. You have to really do the work. And who knows? Maybe I will never get rid of my anxiety around money. Maybe. And that may be a complete, total detriment to my life and to my son's life. And I don't know. But it's crippling. And my anxiety around money is not just, I guess, general anxiety. It is full-blown panic. To the point of my heart's racing, the adrenaline's coming up my throat. I can feel my stomach, you know, is in knots. Am I going to have enough? Am I going to be able to cover this? You know, what do I do about the car? Like, what if the car breaks down? And you know, for a long time, I had like 3 months of savings and then it was gone. And like, okay, how do I replenish that? And I could go on and on, right? I know 99% of us have anxiety over money. I get it. But when it becomes an issue of total and complete debilitating panic is when you've got to talk about it. You have to figure something out. So I've definitely gotten better. I shouldn't say that it's so debilitating that, like, you know, I've never gotten better. I've definitely gotten better. When I talk about the guilt thing, I feel guilty for having money. I don't know if I'm, you know, showing off, which, you know, I drive a 2012 Pathfinder, like I'm not showing anything off. I take care of my shit, right? But it's just that like guilt, like, you know, you're not supposed to have that much money or cheating someone. Oh, that's a huge thing. Like I'm cheating someone out of something. I'm a total fraud. It all, you know, boils back down to I'm not good enough, right? You know, that just kind of blew my mind. It does. It all boils back around to not feeling good enough. And, you know, when I was talking about, you sort of like the anxiety is caused by the post-traumatic stress disorder triggers. And then the bipolar depression is, you know, kind of kicks off from the anxiety when I come down from the anxiety. A manic episode is really just high-end anxiety. Okay. You've got like anxiety disorder and then panic disorder and then manic episode, which, and I'm doing like they go up the ladder, right? At a manic episode, you're not sleeping. You're, you know, on full tilt. Okay. And it doesn't, anxiety feels shitty. Panic, even worse. But when you get to manic episode, you are flying high. It's like a Coke binge. I'm telling you, it's like the most incredible thing. You can get so much done, but you crash hard. So anyways, they all kind of like merge together. Everyone's anxiety is different. So to say someone has anxiety disorder, that can mean so many different things. So I want to talk to you about kind of those definitions and like signs and symptoms and, you know, what to really look for. Understand that, like, if you're prescribed a benzo, I'm going to talk to you about that, okay? But I think a lot of you know what I'm talking about, the Xanax, the Klonopin, all of that. Please, please understand that that is like a short-term fix, okay? And when I say fix, I mean fix. When you start taking those regularly, you won't want to get off of them. And you won't be able to recognize your anxiety. You won't be able to deal with it, figure out what's causing the anxiety, dig deep into the real issues of your life. So just please be careful. Again, not a doctor, but make sure you know all the facts before you get prescribed a benzodiazepine. Okay. So I'm going to read a little bit from the National Institute of Mental Health, and hopefully you'll get something from this. Okay. So occasional anxiety is an expected part of life, like I told you before. You might feel anxious when faced with a problem at work, before taking a test, or before making an important decision. But anxiety disorders involve more than temporary worry or fear. For a person with an anxiety disorder, the anxiety does not go away and can obviously get worse over time, like I've told you, right? The symptoms can interfere with daily activities such as job performance, schoolwork, and relationships. There are several types of anxiety disorders, including generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, and various phobia-related disorders. All those phobias really are heightened anxiety disorder, and it kind of everything melds together, like I said. People with generalized anxiety disorder display excessive anxiety or worry most days for at least 6 months about a number of things such as personal health, work, social interactions, and everyday routine life circumstances. The fear and anxiety can cause significant problems in areas of their life such as social interactions, school, and work. We know these things, right? General anxiety disorder symptoms include feeling restless, wound up, or on edge, being easily fatigued, having difficulty concentrating, mind going blank, being irritable, having muscle tension, difficulty controlling feelings of worry, having sleep problems such as difficulty falling or staying asleep, restlessness, or unsatisfying sleep. Okay, and I've read that little list. I guarantee you, 99% of you have almost all of those things on your list. So again, we all have a little bit of that anxiety in our system naturally. But when it gets to the point where you're not sleeping and you're super irritable all the time, and like this tells us, most days for at least 6 months, you need to see your doctor. That's all there is to it. I'm trying to help you help yourself. That's my new motto, I think. Okay, panic disorder. People with panic disorder have recurrent, unexpected panic attacks. Okay, unexpected. This happens to me sometimes too. Panic attacks are sudden periods of intense fear that come on quickly and reach their peak within minutes. And they can be debilitating, I'm telling you. Attacks can occur unexpectedly or can be brought on by a trigger, such as a feared object or situation, right? Like I was telling you about the PTSD. During a panic attack, people may experience heart palpitations, a pounding heartbeat, or an accelerated heart rate, sweating, trembling, shaking, sensations of shortness of breath, smothering, or choking. Oh my God, it's the worst. Feelings of impending doom, feelings of being out of control. People with panic disorder often worry about when the next attack will happen and actively try to prevent future attacks by avoiding places, situations, or behaviors they associate with panic attacks. Worry about the panic attacks and the effort spent trying to avoid attacks cause significant problems in various areas of the person's life, including the development of agoraphobia. Okay, so with phobia-related disorders, it's an intense fear of or aversion to specific objects or situations, right? Although it can be realistic to be anxious in some circumstances, like I said, the fear people with phobias feel is out of proportion to the actual danger caused by the situation or object. So people with a phobia may have an irrational or excessive worry about encountering the feared object or situation, and or they endure unavoidable objects and situations with intense anxiety. There's several types of phobias and phobia-related disorders. I'm not going to read them all, okay? You know what I'm talking about. Social anxiety disorder, like I was talking to you about mine. People with social anxiety disorder have a general intense fear of or anxiety towards social or performance situations. They worry that actions or behaviors associated with their anxiety will be negatively evaluated by others, leading them to feel embarrassed. This worry often causes people with social anxiety to avoid social situations. Social anxiety disorder can manifest in a range of situations, such as within the workplace or the school environment, using public transportation, being in open spaces, being in enclosed spaces, standing in line, all of that stuff. Avoiding all of that is not necessarily the average way of dealing with those situations. So honestly, the point to all of this is this. Anxiety, it seems like, honestly, is the one thing that kind of lacks the intense stigma that other things have, okay? You know, you may have PTSD, bipolar, schizoaffective disorder, you know, those kind of scary words. But anxiety, I feel like, is almost so common that, you know, I assure you, going in to see your doctor and talking about the anxiety you have and maybe these symptoms I've read off for you are what you're feeling, and you really need to address those things, then please know that there's nothing wrong with that. And finding ways to cope with it, and the whole, you know, exercise and yoga and all of those things, and being with friends. And for those people who are dealing with somebody in their life that has crippling anxiety, I think the best thing you can do is tell them, I really, really feel like you should see someone, and I want you to get help, because, you know, it's causing so many other problems and making me feel like I'm inadequate and doing, you know, the wrong things every time. So my point to you is, I'm trying to help you help yourself. And anxiety can be so crippling. And look at all of the things that you could be missing out on. If I had not walked into that dinner party, I would not have made the friends that I've made. I am now going to get interviewed by one of the girls on her like little video show. I've made some like really close connections with people. Another girl who's going to come on and talk to me about her husband's suicide attempt and what that meant for her. I mean, there's like so many different things that I benefited from by getting out of the car and walking in, regardless of my heart rate. And Anxiety Brooke going, get the hell out of here. You know, she was like, you know, pulling at my shirt as I walked. Like, everyone's going to think you're crazy, or you're fat, or you're, you know, full of yourself. I have a horrible fear of people thinking that I'm just totally full of myself. And I need, you know, all that acceptance and accolades and all of it. And I'm willing to admit that, right? So I'm going to leave you. I know this one was a little bit long, and I obviously have a lot more to say about it. But, you know, leave me your feedback. I got an email the other day from someone. I'm not even sure where this person lives. Big, long email about them finding the courage and finding the strength to go to the doctor. It's all I care about. I want to help you help yourself. Okay? I am so grateful for all of you listeners. I'm grateful for all of the people supporting me financially. I think it's amazing. I know I'm on the right path here. I really do. I have some great opportunities coming up to get a book published and to have sponsorships from pretty big organizations. So I hope you'll stick with me, my loyal, loyal listeners. I love you so much. And I really hope that you take care of yourselves and each other.